Oh, hey, friends, this sale's for you. The DSW Friends and Family event is on. DSW VIP members get 25% off almost everything in stores and online for a limited time. Don't miss out. This only happens twice a year. Not a VIP? You're still family to us. Join for free to get in on the savings. Plus, VIPs always get free shipping on anything. Save on must-own shoes today when you shop the DSW Friends and Family event at your DSW store or DSW.com.
So what is the relationship like between Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears? Well, a new book shedding some light on that. Pearl, good morning. Welcome to the show. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff with you. And yeah, you know, it was amazing to get the detailed reporting that our next guest has in his new book, because there were some drips and drabs that maybe Caleb Williams wasn't completely sold on going to the Chicago Bears before the 2024 draft. But we've got so much more insight into that now. And that's because of our pal Seth Wickersham, who's got a new book out called American Kings, A Biography of the Quarterback. He's also the New York Times bestselling author of It's Better to Be Feared, which is essentially like a Bible for anyone who wants to really know what happened in the Patriots dynasty, both the rise and the fall. Seth Wickersham is with us now. Seth, thanks so much. Congrats on the new book.
Hey, great to see you guys.
Let's get into the Caleb Williams stuff, because that's been the big article you wrote for ESPN and what a lot of people are gravitating towards. So how seriously did Caleb Williams and his father, Carl, look at disrupting the entire draft process and trying to get Caleb to another city besides Chicago?
Well, it was definitely something that they contemplated. And I think that, like, it's important to like take a little bit of a step back and look at it within the context of the way the draft is set up and the way that quarterbacks are best set up for success in the NFL. You know, we've seen time after time how bad coaching and an unstable organization can really affect a talented quarterback who's picked overall and becomes the face of the franchise. Obviously, like someone like Alex Smith is someone who comes to mind about this. And so there's a reason why John and Jack Elway did what they did in 1983, and there's a reason why Archie and Eli Manning did what they did in 2004. And so in the lead-up to the draft, and it was pretty obvious that Caleb was going to be the number one overall pick, his dad, you know, was looking at ways to try to give his son some agency over his future employer. And he explored ways that were earnest. He talked to lawyers, he talked to agents, he talked to Archie Manning. He thought about ways that really weren't going to work out, but were worth kind of just throwing out there as spitball ideas, like Caleb joining the United Football League and doing that for a year if there was a chance that he could become an unrestricted free agent in 2025. And you know, Caleb was very aware of these things too. And at the combine in 2024, he met with the Bears, and it was a good meeting. But it wasn't like they were vibing each other great. And then he also met with Kevin O'Connell, the head coach of the Vikings. And Kevin O'Connell, look, he was a four-year starter at quarterback at San Diego State. He played with Tom Brady in the NFL. He's been around some of the best and brightest minds in coaching, and he's one of the brightest young coaches that we have in the NFL. And that they really got along well. And that kind of got Caleb's mind wondering, you know, is there a chance that something can be done so that, you know, he could go to a place like Minnesota.
Seth, do you think that now we're in year two, that things are going to change and all the fears about the Bears have gone away? Is it a new situation now?
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think that, like, even before Ben Johnson was, you know, a hot coaching candidate, a hot head coaching candidate, I had heard from some of the best coaches in the NFL that, you know, they not only studied some of his schemes, but copied him outright, which in football, you, as you guys know, is like the greatest compliment that someone can ever receive. And so I think that, like, it happened a year after the fact, but I do think that, like, what they have is an innovative offensive mind who's fully invested in Caleb's success and has had track record of coaching quarterbacks well. And so even if, like, you know, the first year was a disaster, and so many of the fears that Carl and Caleb Williams had ended up coming true, I think they're in a good spot now. And, you know, he has a good chance to be a successful quarterback now.
Seth Wickersham is joining us. He's a New York Times bestselling author of It's Better to Be Feared. New book is called American Kings, a biography of the quarterback. And we're talking about some of the details of Caleb Williams joining the Bears. And one line that he gave you, he said, on the record, all the stuff on the record, they're not hiding from any of this, Seth. Caleb Williams said, I wasn't ready to nuke the city. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's a line that could end up staying with him for a very long time if things don't go well in Chicago. Because when I read that, and I'm so glad we get to talk to you because we get more of the context now, he didn't want to make it so ugly that it would almost force Chicago to trade him, or, you know, that it would have been untenable for Bears fans to even pallet this guy, right? It would have been unpalatable. That wasn't, I'll never nuke the city. That was, I wasn't ready to nuke the city. And it got Perloff and I into a really big debate and discussion about whether or not an NBA style, you know, a star that wants out of a city could actually pull something like that in the NFL. And Perloff says, no, it could never happen. To me, I didn't think that Caleb was necessarily taking it off the table. Like, it didn't feel like it was this great love affair now. It almost feels like a wait and see, no?
I wouldn't agree with that. I think that he was reflecting his mindset in the moment when we met in, I want to say it was late January, early February. And so he was reflecting his mindset almost a full year earlier at that time. And, you know, it's in the article, the excerpt or the news story that was on ESPN.com and in the book. But, you know, he likes the city of Chicago and he visited them in April. And this was after his pro day. He went out to dinner with some of the team brass and, you know, he came back thinking, you know, I can do it there. And I like Chicago. I like my teammates. I think I can do it there. And so I wouldn't read too much into like the tenses of that statement. You know, you saw him at the Cubs game the other day. I mean, I think, you know, he's trying to definitely become part of the culture there. And, you know, look, I mean, Caleb's one part of a book that touches on a lot of quarterbacks and a lot of different genre, you know, levels of notoriety and accomplishment. And, you know, one of the interesting things about being a quarterback, as you guys know, is that it's not like being a shortstop or a center fielder or a point guard. I mean, you are taking on all of these different mantles and wearing all of these different hats, from being the spokesperson of a multi-billion dollar, you know, organization to a philanthropist, to being a leader, amateur psychologist, raging asshole at times. I mean, you have to be able to do all of these things, and it requires a certain personality. And, you know, I get into a lot of the, you know, the types of ways you have to be wired to do this job, which I think is, you know, it's almost as important as being able to throw the deep out.
So can I have one more question about Caleb? Because I do want to move on, because you write about a lot of different quarterbacks in this book. It's called American Kings, a biography of the quarterback. Can you just fill in the blank for me on this one? If things get off to a rough start in Chicago this season, ..
Well, that could very well happen. I mean, you're talking about a second year quarterback. You're talking about, you know, defensive coordinators who have had an entire offseason to study him and to know his weaknesses. And you're talking about a guy who's starting, you know, under what, his third play caller in the NFL. It could easily happen. I mean, I think that, like, even though the NFL, as you guys know, is wired to help quarterbacks be successful quickly. I mean, you know, the rule changes have obviously been the main reason because of that. It does take time. And, you know, not every defensive coordinator around the league is, you know, Rex Ryan or Bill Belichick, but they all know how to take away what a guy does well. And it just takes a little bit of time. And I think that, like, it's very plausible that they could start slow in September, just because there are so many new pieces. And that's, you know, it happens. It just does.
Seth, it's funny. You're talking about all these roles of a quarterback, a psychologist, obviously an athlete. It's so funny. I was thinking about Shedeur Sanders falling in the fifth round, and the fact that America had such a hard time evaluating how he fits this role of a quarterback. When you saw that, what was your thought about Shedeur not only falling out of the top three, but all the way to the fifth round?
I was surprised, honestly. Like, you guys can see behind me, there's that thing that says Go Buffs. I was born in Colorado and grew up part of my life in Boulder, so I paid a lot of attention to Colorado, and I thought he was a phenomenal college quarterback. You guys will remember Peter King, our good friend. He was at the game when USC Caleb's last year at USC, played at Colorado, and if you read his column from that game, I mean, he basically predicts that Shador's going to be better than Caleb. I think that, you know, people want to label it, you know, say this is the reason why this happened, when, you know, each team is its own kind of ecosystem, and everybody kind of thinks differently and has different needs. But I do think that it was pretty obvious at some point that the league as a whole looked at him as a project, and coming as a project, you know, there's a lot of things you have to consider, because you have the fact that he thought he was going to go in the top 10. You have the fact that, you know, he's got a very prominent father who's been the only guy who's really coached him throughout his career. And, you know, how would he adapt to working for someone else? And if you're bringing in a rookie backup quarterback in the middle to the late rounds, that guy's under the radar, and Shador Sanders is never going to be under the radar. So I think that, like, so some of those were some of the things that probably came up. But, like, on the plus side for Shador, he has a chance to earn it rather than having it handed to him. And, you know, I think that, like, that route always helps you in the long run better than the short run.
But Seth, why is he a project? We saw him sling it all over the field. It had 37 touchdowns at Colorado. To me, he wasn't obvious as a project.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, I think that, like, look, every team has different needs, but, like, I agree with you. And I think that, like, one of the things that we forget about is that, you know, quarterbacks come out and we think that they are who they are, even based on their first year or two. And we've seen that there's an enormous economy and demand for the type of quarterbacks that, if they can just survive, even if they don't end up succeeding with the team that drafts them, if they end up in a good spot after that and they manage to hang on, there is a really, really lucrative place for them in the NFL. I mean, you think about Geno Smith, he comes to mind. You think about Baker Mayfield to an extent. I think that that Will Levis could end up being one of those guys that, you know, if he ends up on a different team with a better coaching staff and he's a little under the radar for a bit, the game slows down for these guys once they have a chance to take a step back. And so, you know, I don't know how it's going to go for Shador, but I think that having a chance to watch the game and learn from a pretty good coaching staff there, whether it ends up working out in Cleveland or not, I think, you know, it won't hurt him in the long run if he can be one of those guys who can stomach some of the disappointments and keep going.
Seth Wickersham is joining us. Of course, he's a New York Times bestselling author, reporter. His book, It's Better to Be Feared, was a New York Times bestseller. He's got a new book. It's called American Kings, A Biography of the Quarterback. And Pearl, I'm glad you brought up Shador, because it lends nicely to the next player I want to talk about, which is Arch Manning. I mean, as far as famous families go, doesn't get any bigger than the Manning, so I always call the first family of football. What did you find out about Arch, about his recruitment to Texas, and how does he play into this book?
I think that some of those details we might have to discuss again in September. But
give us one. You know, give us one.
I think the thing that's interesting again about Arch is that, you know, going back to what we talked about earlier with wearing the hats. Now, that's on steroids if you're a Manning, because, you know, when you're talking about someone who cannot be under the radar, that's any Manning who decides to be a quarterback. And so, you know, how he decided to do this and why and what it meant at a very young age that he, you know, took on this mantle, because, you know, you're taking on a lot. And I use Arch as a way to write about all of the Mannings. And, you know, even Peyton was able to go under the radar a little bit more than Arch was. And so I think that, like, when he, you know, went to Isidore Newman High and ended up starting as a freshman, which neither Peyton nor Eli had done, I think that, like, you know, you have to be of a certain type of mindset and able to handle that type of scrutiny. I think one of the reasons why he ended up at Texas is because Austin is a huge town relative to a lot of college towns, and there's a chance to kind of blend in a little bit more than, you know, say he was at Oxford, Mississippi.
But it's funny. Impossible, right? Yeah. He's not going to blend in, right?
Well,
I mean, I think there's a better chance of it. That's what I said.
Yeah.
Seth, I'm curious. If we're talking about quarterback personalities. I know you talked to a lot of retired greats, too, in this book. Did you dive into the Brett Favre documentary? Comes out, I believe, tonight.
Today.
It feels like if you're talking about an unusual personality, how does Brett Favre fit in this picture of what a great quarterback is in your mind?
Well, I had to, you know, one of the things that's interesting is you do a book on quarterbacks and everyone says, oh, did you end up writing about blank? And, you know, it ends up being interesting because you can tell who people love, like, you know, everyone from like Fran Tarkenton to Dan Fouts and all these people. I mean, the people I picked, I thought they needed to be part of a unique American experience that I really wanted to tap into and had a lot to say about. I think Favre, even though he's not one of my main characters, I mean, there is no doubt that, you know, you talk about a unique American story, you know, almost dying when he's in college, almost drinking himself out of the league. Obviously, there was the addiction problems, winning three MVPs in a row, you know, and then his, you know, his stint with the Jets and beyond, which let's just say has been messy and revealing. I think that, like, you know, he certainly fits into it. I haven't seen the documentary. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Jeff Perlman wrote a great book about Brett Favre, and I felt like that, you know, there wasn't a whole lot for me to add beyond that.
Seth, I want to close the loop here. We started with Caleb and his family really looking into real ways to circumvent him going to Chicago before the draft in 2024. Mm-hmm. Now we think ahead to Arch Manning, and I don't know if it's going to be next year, if it's in 2 years, but obviously Eli, and with the help of his family, definitely pulled this sort of power play, getting Eli to the New York Giants and away from the then San Diego Chargers. Do you anticipate that the Mannings are going to have a similar involvement here with Arch when he eventually does go to the NFL, if he is in play for the number one overall pick? Do you see history repeating itself with the Mannings?
That there's so many hypotheticals there. I mean, I think that, like, you know, again, that's the assumption that he'll be the first pick. I think that that's a big assumption at this point. He's got a lot of football to play. I mean, Caleb Williams, you know, had an unbelievable college career. I mean, he still has a lot of football to play, and he has to earn that he's in that position. Because if you're not the number one pick, I don't know what kind of power play you have necessarily, because you're not exactly sure who's going to get you. But, like, you know, look, they know that, you know, this can be ugly at times, the Mannings do, and that, you know, if there's something you need to do to try to help, you know, ensure someone's success, you know, are you willing to do that? And again, you know, going back to Caleb, I mean, that was the answer at that point. I mean, there was really no way around the draft. And the question was whether, you know, they were ready to create a situation like John and Jack did and like Archie and Eli did that was untenable. And Caleb didn't want to do that. And it's important to note that even though, you know, these are powerful and kind of big personality fathers, you know, Caleb was the one making the decision. And I think that Arch Manning will be the one making the decision ultimately whenever, you know, it's his time and whatever circumstance he's in.
Last one for you, Seth. Can't let you get out of here without a Belichick question. I mean, you dedicated a big part of your life to writing about that dynasty, and it's better to be feared. As I said, it's a Patriots Bible. There's been a lot of things, documentaries and stuff. Seth's book is by far the one thing you need to read about the Patriots dynasty, and I've said that to you before, and I'll say it again. Now Belichick's in a much different light here with the Jordan Hudson relationship, and it's crossed over into the mainstream. You spend a lot of time digging into Belichick. Are you shocked by this? What's the most shocking part of it? And what do you anticipate for him in North Carolina? And sorry, not to ask a question that goes on forever. Do you think Robert Kraft really muddied the water for Belichick not getting another NFL head coaching job?
Well, so Don Van Atta and Jeremy Fowler and I reported about that, you know, Kraft said, you know, you can't trust the guy.
He
said that to Arthur Blank,
yeah,
one of his good friends. Kraft denied saying that, to be fair. You know, I do think that, like, since Belichick opened the door for Brady to walk out and Brady walked right out of it, you know, it hasn't been a great run for him, you know, in any way. I mean, you know, he picked his quarterback in the future, didn't really work out there. They didn't have, you know, a lot of success his last couple years there. The Dynasty, you know, documentary was not kind to him, to put it mildly. And I think that, like, as you look at what's happening in North Carolina, a lot of these issues are self-inflicted. And he's someone who, he's the highest paid employee in the state, and when, you know, public employee. And, you know, when North Carolina hired him, they probably had to be thinking, like, what we're getting at the minimum is a buttoned up, no drama football program. And that has not been the case so far. And, you know, it sucks in a way that, like, everything is about his relationship. And, you know, nobody knows anything about what kind of players. No one's talking about those players. No one's talking about, I'm really interested in seeing how he might try to, you know, slap around Dabo Swinney's offense. And in a college game that's really hard to play defense in. But, you know, instead, you know, everything is focused on his relationship. And a lot of that is self-inflicted things. And so I think for a coach who like has spent his entire career trying to minimize distractions and be a leader and a symbol of that, this has to be a particularly frustrating stretch because it's been a lot of distractions and some of them he's responsible for.
Seth, congrats again. American Kings, a biography of the quarterback. We'll have to get you back on before Texas' season starts so we can talk more in depth about Arch because we're just like fascinated by this young man. But thank you. And again, congrats.
Thanks, guys. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Seth, too. Really, really. I mean, the quarterback is endlessly fascinating.
Totally. I disagree with one thing with you.
With
Seth.
Me? Yeah.
No, with Seth, really. Like, I am not fascinated by North Carolina playing Clemson. This is Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick might be the greatest NFL coach of all time. He's not a miracle worker. He's not going to make North Carolina football watchable.
I think people will believe he is a miracle worker. Wow. He's become a lot more mortal. He's acting like a mere mortal now.
Well, I'm telling you, like, I don't think anybody could turn North Carolina football into a thing. I've watched that program for years. Basketball, yes. Football, no.
888-710-4ISN. Appreciate Seth spending some time with us there. Really interesting about Caleb and about Arch and everything. And we'll talk about that Brett Favre documentary, which drops today. It's M&P.
Oh, hey, friends. This sale's for you. The DSW Friends and Family event is on. DSW VIP members get 25% off almost everything in stores and online for a limited time. Don't miss out. This only happens twice a year. Not a VIP? You're still family to us. Join for free to get in on the savings. Plus, VIPs always get free shipping on anything. Save on must-own shoes today when you shop the DSW Friends and Family event at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff Show. Very interesting talking to Seth Wickersham. Has a new book, American Kings. I think he actually floated the idea. You asked him, will Arch Manning play hardball in the draft? I think Arch might be different than his uncles. I feel like Arch, the fact that he's sticking around Texas, I feel like he's a team player. I do not think that he's going to be this big drama guy in the draft. I don't know what I'm basing that on, nothing. He just seems like a team guy. And not that Eli wasn't.
I was going to say, did Eli stick around?
Yeah, I mean, they all stick around. I just think that Arch is on a different path than his uncles. You know, one went to Tennessee and one went to Ole Miss. Arch went to Texas. He just feel like he wants to be different. And I that might mean whoever drafts me number one, maybe I don't go to the Giants or the Colts or the Saints or not some new team that has no Manning direction. It feels like he wants to be his own dude, but that's not knowing him at all.
Well, so. I'm not saying that he would necessarily try to get himself to the Giants. I was asking Seth, do you think he would try to get himself to a preferred team?
Yeah, away famously, from a bad team.
And Peyton Manning went back to Tennessee, a lot of people believe, because he didn't want to go to the Jets.
Yeah.
They also thought that Bill Parcells wouldn't guarantee he would take him number one. There's a lot of, you know, history around that. But Eli Manning kind of aw-shucked his way through that whole thing. And I know it was 2004, and it was a different time, especially with social media and stuff. But Eli just kind of, like, you know, shuffled his feet and looked down at the floor and got through that. It will be dramatic now. Arch will not be able to do that.
But Eli went to an under-the-radar college, definitely. I mean, Ole Miss has never won anything.
But his dad's college.
Yeah, but I mean, Jeffrey Lake, he stayed out of the spotlight in college. Like, Ole Miss is not going to compete for a title. Sure. Like, he knew that. And I think Eli was easily manipulated by his dad, whereas I think Arch might have something different going on. It just feels Arch, you know, everyone's like, whoa, is Arch going to complain that he's not starting at Texas? And he didn't complain at all. He seemed totally happy there, being behind Quinn Ewers. And it doesn't feel like everyone's like, well, where are you going to leave Texas? And he didn't seem to show any interest in that ever.
Yeah, I guess there's also maybe a different timeline if the Mannings all go to college, assuming they're going to be there for 4 years. So what's the rush, right?
Yeah, and he's also kind of on the young side. I don't know. I just don't know that Arch is going to pull this. As Seth said, first of all, there's no guarantee he's number one overall, and that he's going to pull this power play. Who knows? DJ Lagway could be one. He could be two. It's not a huge stretch. Dilla Raiola might be one. Who knows?
See,
that'd be surprised.
I don't think you have to be one to do the power play. If your last name's Manning. If you're anyone else, I don't think it can work. If your last name's Manning, I think you can still do the power play.
That's a great question. Seth said, if you're not one, how do you do the power play?
Last name's Manning.
Yeah, but if you're eight, you're not going to do a power play. But you don't want to... Well, this Shador ran into this. You don't want to fall too far.
Well, but Shador also apparently treated the pre-draft process like he could, you know... Could care less if he was, you know, going through it or not.
I think you're playing a dangerous game. If you're not the number one overall pick and you start pulling power plays, say you tell the number 14, don't draft me, boom, all of a sudden you're falling like a rock. I think some of that happened with Shador.
I do too.
That's going to be fun, man. This is going to be a whole year of this topic.
Uh-huh.
Or 2 years, maybe.
Get ready for Archmania.
Watching me is just completely average.
It's impossible.
No, it's totally possible.
I think Texas is too good for him to be average. A little worried about their offensive line. But
you could not have possibly been more average than Quinn Ewers last year. He was a former number one overall recruit and a Heisman hopeful. And
they made it to the Final Four twice.
Yeah, but he was completely mid.
We don't talk enough about how he fell, but he also had injury concerns that Arch doesn't have, knock on wood for the guy.
Yeah, but I do think there's a possibility there'll be other big stars. You know, somebody else could explode. There could be a Joe Burrow next year. We just assume Arch. That is a good point. We do not know that this guy's going number one. He's played how many games? And you already, I think you talk about him like he's already the face of the sport. Probably is, but he hasn't done anything yet. Just keep that in mind.
Bogus is here with headlines. What's up?
Maggie, Scotty, they might dress like Knicks City dancers, but EJ and Manny appear to be decent Knicks fans. I assume they wouldn't throw garbage at a guy on the street in a Tyrese Halliburton jersey, but that did happen to Hans Perez in Manhattan after the Knicks closed out the Celtics in Game 6, and now Halliburton is flying Perez and a plus one to Indy for Game 4. Of the Eastern Conference Final.
I mean, the guy was desperate for attention as well. I mean, why are you wearing a Pacers jersey in Manhattan after the Knicks? Just you know, attention to detail, yeah. Things like that.
She was asking for it. I wouldn't employ that one. I wouldn't employ that one. But there is. I was thinking about that because the guy obviously is walking around the victory party of the Knicks in a Halliburton jersey. So you know you're going to get some kind of attention. He doesn't deserve to get bags of garbage thrown on him.
No, definitely not.
No, but I mean...
Also, what's the beef with Windhorse? Was Brian Windhorse is getting cans thrown at him as he's walking back to his hotel? Well, did you guys see that?
Yeah, well, listen, I think...
Because he picked the Celtics along with everyone else in the media?
He puts a lot of stank on his predictions. Like, you Knicks fans think you're going to... Like, so there's a reason why Knicks fans
definitely has an agenda against the Knicks.
But
he's got something against the
Knicks. At the same time, I do feel like there is an issue with the people that are going to these crowds, and it's because of those early side talk videos, which were hilarious.
Yeah,
Bing Bong and KD, don't you want to be a Nick? Like, those were actually funny, and those were organic. They just showed up after a game, and people were just leaving the garden.
That was the game one of a
regular season game from 2 years ago. But now what happens is because of that video, we have these scumbags who are showing up to the garden purely just to be over the top and just to harass people, and that can't happen.
And Manny's got their back, it sounds like.
I do think the guy who showed up in the Halbert jersey, like, I think that, like, that's just stupid. Like, why you definitely wanted attention. You definitely wanted
attention, but not there's like full bags of garbage being thrown at the guy.
No,
you
and I'm
say something.
You shouldn't do that. Yeah. But I do think that, like, okay, you want to send the guy, whatever. Like, that guy, I think, also like problem. All the problem, in all this is clout. Everybody wants clout. Mm. The guys that show up at the garden want clout. This jerk showing up in a Halliburton jersey at a Knicks game wants clout. Like, everyone's looking for their viral moments. Mm-hmm. And I think it's creating bad environments for people like Windhorse, who should not be having garbage thrown at, whatever was thrown at him. It's ridiculous.
Well, but it's not Windhorse's fault that he's giving his unvarnished opinion that he's being asked to give on the in the media. Because if he was just some Knicks homer, that also might... That's not good either,
he's
right?
Far from a homer.
No, but it's not even that.
But also beauty's in the eye of the beholder. There could be 29 fan bases who think that he's against them.
But I do think, like, I think there is a thing with the media, and maybe on this show, of like being like, hey, Knicks fan, guess what's going to happen to you? That doesn't happen to other NBA teams.
Okay, but EJ, you also have people who are so hardcore stumping for the Knicks on national television, including Stephen A. Smith.
Who else besides Stephen A. Smith?
Have you ever, you've watched the NBA ESPN halftime show?
Yeah.
Does anyone else, you wouldn't even know sometimes who the Knicks are playing.
Well, yeah, but
by the halftime show.
But that's not them stumping for the Knicks. That's Stephen A being a fan and then them reacting to him. They don't have, ESPN is not pro Knicks. I mean, that's like farthest from the truth. Okay.
Everyone thinks there's a media bias, but here's the thing. Like, it's really hard. Sometimes I'm going to use this analogy. It can be hard to sue famous people because famous people have the right to retaliate. They have access to the platform to get their side of the story out. Same thing with the Knicks. I mean, first of all, you have in the biggest city of the world, you got an entire cable channel dedicated to you, right? So you do have, and those people are also crossed over to ESPN.
Sure.
So you have Monica McNutt, who's also on ESPN, who's doing Knicks. You have Alan Hahn, who's also doing Knicks, been doing Knicks forever, who's also on big ESPN. Stephen A, outright fan, biggest person in media fan. Like, You have retaliation here. It's not like everyone's ganging up on New York.
No, that's fine. I don't think people are ganging up in New York. But I do think, again, what I spoke to specifically was there's a thing because Knicks fans are their own character that when you make a prediction, you have to then also take a shot at Knicks fans. When we don't care about Brian Windhorst. He could say Knicks were going to. There were 12 people who said Knicks were going to lose.
Right.
We're not all looking for Chris Herring, or we're not looking for you know, Dave McMenamin. Like, we're not looking for those people. It's when you go on television and you poke at the bear and then the bear bites back, that's not surprising. But again, what I'm saying though is, I kind of want to be serious. Like, that whole thing is garbage. No pun intended. Like, you can't be throwing garbage at people. And I do think that, like, these people who are trying to be caricatures of what they think Knicks fans are.
Right.
In part because of people like Stephen A. is creating an environment that is not good. It's not okay.
It's like not safe or winning.
No, it's not.
Can I share my favorite tweet on this whole thing?
Yeah.
Our former boss, Spike Eskin, who was a WFAN program director, he retweeted, harassing people for supporting another team instead of celebrating. Worst fan base on the planet. Now he's a host in Philadelphia.
Yeah, give me a break.
It's like pot kettle. Like,
you realize what you're saying, Spike. Like, I was the one told if you have a New York license plate, you can't park in the link.
Yeah, try to show up in a triangle jersey to an Eagles game. It's not going to go well.
A Philly fan calling New York the worst fan base on the planet? We've been violent towards other fans.
Yeah, who was the guy? Nick Bosa. Not Nick Bosa, the other Bosa. Joey Bosa tried to show up to his brother's game, and they basically wanted to fight him in the parking lot a couple years ago.
Of course.
Self-awareness, y'all. Self-awareness.
I just thought that was rich.
I get a little worried for any fan base, but especially for the way that the Knicks themselves, actually, and the Knicks fans are celebrating. Like, some of the behind-the-scenes footage of Leon Rose, the GM, and stuff like that, people are, like, crying to get back to the conference finals, which is fine. But you're also putting that out for people's consumption, right? That's not – that was an intimate moment that they turned into a marketing moment. And so you have the team acting like they just won the finals. The fans are acting like they won the finals when you still have two more rounds to go. And I'm not saying you might not do it. It would help me, Drought Buster 2025. Year of the slump buster. I would love for the Knicks to be on contributing to my best take of my life. But everyone's acting in New York like the mission is accomplished here and that the crowd's only going to get more and more intense is what I'm saying.
Well, Big Body Brunson? Did you see him?
I think the one reason why I'm not worried about that was two reasons, honestly. One, Tom Thibodeau, that guy's a psychopath. There's no way he's not focused, lasered in on the Pacers.
No, the players aren't the problem.
So that's me, like, and I was going to say Brunson was number two. Because even if you could argue, I know Kat was wearing like the troll Boston shirt and I've seen dudes hanging out with people in the club. But those two guys will not let this team lose focus. So I'm not really worried about Leon Rose and celebrating. Like, that doesn't matter.
The irony to me of this whole thing is that the Knicks are the most likable team. Like, how do you not like Jalen Brunson? Maybe you don't like Carl Anthony Towns, but how do you not like Jalen Brunson? How do you not like his story? How do you not like OG Anunoby? Like, these guys are just grinders.
But they're boring, though. I mean, like, but they don't dunk like Anthony Edwards. Like, they're not. They're definitely like below the rim players or just kind of working.
That's a clutch player of the year. I mean, the guy's like magic.
It could be just a one person thing, but I had a very interesting conversation on the beach in Mexico with a Minnesota native who was excited that they were going to the conference finals. And I was like, oh, yeah, you guys got a great team. Anthony Edwards, he was like, you know what? I don't like Anthony Edwards. I think he's a jerk. And what he does off the court is actually, it's hard to root for him.
That person's a real diehard fan then if they're following.
Well, I was going to say, do you think that is that like, Is it possible that he's also turned people off with some of the stuff that's happened off the court?
I feel like Silver would run on a block Shea Gilgeous-Alexander's shot to get Anthony Edwards into the finals. Like, he's the potential.
He's the potential star.
No, I mean, that's why I asked. I'm just I was stunned by that reaction by someone who's from Minnesota. Now, to be clear,
Edwards is abrasive. She,
by the way, describes herself as a casual fan. She says she's I'm not a super NBA fan.
He's super abrasive. I mean, he is. He doesn't change in any situation.
Well, that's what I said. There's something that's keeping this guy from being the true face of the league.
Yeah, he's 22 years old.
It's not the basketball.
Old. Yeah, it's his age. If he could win this thing, they want him to be the face.
But he doesn't still, right?
What?
No.
He keeps saying that he doesn't want to be the face of the league.
He's just saying that because he thinks that's what you're supposed to say.
Well, there's also, I mean, he's got a couple of things that are very unbecoming of him.
The personal stuff. Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. That's what EJ's talking about.
Right. But I don't think the young fans care at all about that. They care about the fact that, did you see that dunk he had in the last game?
Yeah.
Yep. Like, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it was something I didn't think about because I kind of assumed that everyone loved Anthony Edwards, but that's someone from the city saying that they love the team, but it's hard to root for him.
To be fair.
He's very anti. He's not like people from Minnesota. Minnesota people are very, like, under what's the word? Like, they're charming. They're not like people who brag. They're not braggadocious. They're understated. Exactly.
Except for Prince.
Yeah, well, true.
Different type of thing.
Randy Moss.
He's not from Minnesota.
Yeah, but they'll embrace. Yeah, Anthony Edwards ain't from Minnesota.
Yeah, his exit out of Minnesota wasn't that great, though, Randy, if you remember.
Yeah. Push a cop. I remember well.
Bogues, hang with us. We have not gotten to any of your updates on time because we're busy chit-chatting about Knicks fans throwing cans at Brian Windhorst.
I love Brian Windhorst.
888-710-4ISN. I don't even know if there's a hotel closer for Wendy.
I really hope that there's something happens with a group of Knicks fans where they do something with him and like do a fun video or something where they
are bad.
Him. Yeah, because like that was corny. And yeah. I'm telling you, there are not real Knicks fans who thought that was cool. It's only
I don't like them.
Losers who are showing up from Long Island, getting on the railroad, who are already hammered.
I know my people, right?
And they're showing up, and they're a young group, and they're outliers.
The guys from Long Island?
Have you been on the Long Island Railroad after the Knick game?
I've been on the railroad every single day,
right,
man.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I grew up in Queens. I think there are jerks in Queens.
I think that this is a particular crowd.
We're not leapfrogging Queens coming in from Bethpage to rough up Windhorst. I'm insulted.
Oh, you should take that personally.
I am, because I prefer to be from Queens. I just temporarily live in Long Island.
You don't want to be associated
with Long Island, whatever.
888-710-4ISN. Okay, lots more to do, believe it or not. Not just Bogus's update. We have a question for you, and we need your help, MMP.
Go New York! Go New York!
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The Defensive Player of the Week is sponsored by Navy Federal Credit Union, proudly celebrating all who go above and beyond during Military Appreciation Month. Learn more at NavyFederal.org/celebrate. Our members are the mission. Now, EJ Pick says he probably went WNBA, but could you do a Defensive Player of the Week that previews the upcoming series and guesses who will be the big defensive factor in the conference finals?
Oh, I like this.
Like Rudy
spin.
Gobert?
Or
I don't do nothing. I think that, actually, I'm going to go in advance, and I think that Kayson Wallace's defense on Anthony Edwards will make him the defense, or Lou Dort. One of those
this
guys.
This is a preview?
Oh, or Alex Caruso. No, Alex Caruso.
A
boom.
Defensive preview.
It's Caruso on Jokic.
I'm going to go with, like, Alana Smith 2 blocks from the Lynx. I still think you were right. I think EJ went WNBA.
I got Pete Alonso. What you got, EJ?
Get me a garbage bag.
It's not the most watch out this guy's trying to throw the ball player of the week.
First Knicks fans, not Mets fans throwing garbage at people. All right, defensive player of the week this week is Alex Caruso, who on Sunday, which technically is still this week, had a phenomenal defensive performance guarding Nikola Jokic, who has about 100 pounds and 6 inches of height on him. Jokic was held to just 20 points and 9 rebounds. Alex Caruso was a +40 in the game. Also had 3 steals in the Thunder's 125-93 victory in Game 7 over the Nuggets.
No. I need to go home.
Missed an opportunity to give it to Aaliyah Boston there. Five blocks. But so who does Caruso cover tonight?
I mean, it's going to be an army of defenders going against Ant-Man and Randall. They're going to be like, wait, what happened after last series? I and then they're going to victimize Gobert. I really like OKC in this series with the matchup.
True.
Although OKC can't shoot the ball and has never played in a close game. So I don't know. Who do you like? Would you have a lean in this one?
I thought the Nuggets were going to win game 7. So clearly I was off on that. They get off to a great start, but then it completely
fell apart.
That
home court, though, is crazy.
So that'd
there.
Be OKC.
Yeah. No. You like it? I'm in 7 in the home court? Or
I don't know. I'm kind of tempted to pick an upset again. There could, you know, we've talked about dynasties being dead in the NBA, and like, is it someone's time? Is it just their time? It might be the time for Minnesota to make it to the finals. But then again, Shea's the MVP, could be his time too.
It's their time. I mean, they're still new on the scene. It feels like if it's time, it's the Thunder season.
Yeah, no, it is their season. So, okay, Thunder. I wish I had a stronger lean here, but Thunder and 6.
You know how I hate Gobert. I can't wait to see if Gobert gets caught up the top of the key on a pick and roll, how awful he's going to look. Give it to me in my veins.
Perlova, I can't tell if he likes to root for guys better or root for guys to get embarrassed more.
Definitely likes rooting better against people.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, you're rooting hard against the Knicks. I know that.
I mean, I am.
I got to be honest, my family, I haven't told you guys this. Ed Bogues, you might realize this. My kids are so into the Knicks right now.
Yeah.
Because I took them to those front row seats. Lucy and Timothy Chalamet is a big Knicks fan. She made me sit and watch all these Timothy Chalamet rooting for the Knicks fans. A little into it. I'm going to admit it.
Oh, yeah.
Man, are we even fans of sports anymore? Or is it just celebrity fans? Between Taylor Swift, and now Timothy Chalamet.
I know.
It's like Jalen Brunson's got to be like, what the hell do I have to do?
Wait, hold on. But Tim's been a Knicks fan since he was a kid. I mean, he went out to go find Landry Fields at Grand Central when he was like 11 years old.
Right. But Timmy, that's not sitting front row. No, that Lucy Perloff didn't know that.
No. Lucy, but Maggie's right.
Kylie Jenner showed up.
Some of these people are fakes, by the way, these celebrities, right? They're lifelong. We had a big debate. How much does Penn Badgley really like the Knicks? That was a discussion in my house last night. I'm not joking.
I'll tell you who is a bandwagoner, and it's going to hurt me to say. Bad Bunny.
Oh, yeah. He showed up out of nowhere.
I've seen him in 2 games in the last 3 years.
Well, I mean, yeah, when he's, you know, around New York City and they'll
hosting
offer
SNL.
Him those free tickets. Yeah, but I mean, he just suddenly showed up wearing 90s Knicks stuff.
Yeah, where did he get that 99 Knicks hat? That joint is fire.
Where does Bad Bunny get cool stuff? I mean, how does that guy get his hands on anything?
It looks
fun?
Like an authentic. Like, I'm serious. Like, where did he get that? Like, where would he find that?
I'm so sad right now that Bad Bunny's a fake fan.
Yeah, I'm not ranking Benito up there with Tracy Morgan and Tim Chalamet and Spike.
I think anyone who's from New York, I think you're going to confirm that they are probably Knicks fans or at least rooted for the team while they're here. Anyone who's not, I think you have to ask questions.
Bunny just likes the New York aura, but I digress.
Who's the biggest Pacer super fan?
Pat McAfee.
Yeah, probably.
Well, that's interesting.
Because I don't even think you can get Caitlin now. She's in her season.
Yeah, it's probably. No, she'll probably be at a game.
Hey, LeBron, we're pulling for your groin.
She doesn't sit courtside, though.
She'll be in the booth. Yeah, but she'll be at a game. Uh-huh. She was there last time they played them.
They don't have like their own Paul Rudd. They don't have like any of those. There's no celebrity from Indiana.
No, I mean, they were on Parks and Rec all the time.
Yes, right.
But that doesn't count.
Yeah,
Detlef Schrempf and Roy Hibbert.
Ron Swanson.
Yeah, Roy Hibbert had an excellent cameo on Parks and Rec.
They're just shooting hoops in Aziz Ansari's party venue.
Roy Hibbert definitely made an appearance on Parks and Rec.
I think he had like a 3-episode arc.
Yeah.
Did Larry Bird ever make it on?
We now know who's a famous Timberwolf fan.
Alex Rodriguez.
From the U. Good old Michael Irvin. He was at the game.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was at the game. You didn't see him kiss Anthony Edwards, and Anthony Edwards looked like he wanted to throw him into the fourth.
How did that happen?
Yeah, so he's apparently good fans with Randall, good friends with Randall. Randall's, of course, from
Dallas.
Yeah. So he flew to Minnesota for one of the games in the last series and was there and took pictures with Randall and got on the court and took pictures with Anthony Edwards and kissed him on the cheek.
I can't imagine a more May-December relationship than Julius Randall and Michael Irving. Is your update sponsored?
No.
Just making sure.
No, and there's also the internet, so people don't really I need me anymore.
Stop.
That's right.
I Googled celebrity Indiana Pacer fans, and there's a ranking. Number one was Tony Stewart.
Oh, okay.
Number two was Mike Epps.
Sure.
Number three was Pete Buttigieg.
Okay.
Four, Jared Fogle. I don't think that.
No. Take that out.
That did not age well. Those are the top four.
I'm on a Reddit thread, and it lists Jesse Eisenberg, the indie film actor, as the number one fan, and then someone responded, "Oh, that's Indiana's Drake."
Indiana's Chalamet. Yeah.
Did you say Letterman?
Oh, Letterman.
Letterman apparently is here. Priyanka Chopra is a Pacer fan.
Oh, the actress. Really? She's an actress, right?
Nick Jonas's wife?
Yeah, why would she be a Pacer fan?
I have no idea.
For the Google AI, which we know that has to be real, right?
Combination.
No cap.
Oh, yeah, there's a video of her at a Pacer game.
You know who's super fun for the T-Wolves? Did you guys see Justin Jefferson and J.J. McCarthy? Mike, that was a good time.
That was cool.
I like
that.
The NFL-NBA crossover. That could work.
No, my favorite is when NFL guys go to a baseball game and have no idea what's going on.
Those are always funny.
Hockey.
I know.
Yeah. Thank you.
Let's just chug a beer.
EJ Stewart, thank you, Manny Rodriguez, Andrew Bogish, Andrew Kaplan, Seth Wickersham joined us. If you missed that, you can download Maggie and Perloff podcast. Weedos, coffee drinkers, you know who you are.